A bit of history was made in the Assembly yesterday. A majority of MLAs back same-sex marriage for the first time by 53 votes to 52. Yeah, very narrow squeak indeed. But the motion was blocked due to that DUP petition of concern, as it's known. That's an Assembly procedure that requires votes to reach a certain level of cross-community support. It failed that test because the bulk of unionist MLAs voted against it. But campaigners for gay marriage still celebrated the vote. Vinny's been out and about to ask some of you what you think.
Do you think gay marriage should be made legal here in Northern Ireland?
I don't have a problem with people being gay or gay married. It's up to themselves. They can't help how they were born.
It doesn't seem right, but at the same time, times are changing. And
you're depriving people of benefits and rights that they can get within a marriage when they're in a committed, loving relationship.
Some people might say, well, look, this takes away from what marriage is all about, the tradition that's there.
Yes, I know, but sure, marriage nowadays could be anything.
It should be made completely legal, obviously, in churches and that also, so it makes it feel, you know, like a proper ceremony.
No.
Why not?
Because I feel it's against the laws of the... what the Bible says. If they feel they want to live together, then that is no bother.
Everyone has an entitlement to have a belief, but people should also be allowed to do what they want to do as well.
Marriage to me is between a man and a woman.
A wedding is a man and a woman. It's not a man and a man. A man and a woman.
What about a woman and a woman?
No. A woman and a woman, no.
Well, it's legal in England, I don't see why not.
Definitely not, that's against God's law.
Most definitely.
Why?
Just, if you love somebody, you love somebody, and that's the, that's the reason.
There you go, mixed views, as ever, contentious subject. On the line, SDLP MLA Claire Hannah, and also the TUV leader, Jim Alistair. Claire, I'll come to you first. I mean, a narrow squeak, 53-52, but does it really change anything? I mean, even if the petition of concern hadn't been used, it wasn't a binding vote, was it? It wasn't legislation.
Well, I think it does change things. It was, for the first time, a majority of MLAs, and I think that reflects public opinion polling, not just in your vox pops there, but consistent polling that has been done that suggests... A good two-thirds of people support this. But what it has done is sent a positive message to everybody, but particularly young gay people who for years were told that their relationships and their lives were less valued. And you know, whenever I was speaking yesterday and thinking about the result, and I think about testimony I heard from parents who talked about their feelings when their child first told them they were gay and their worries, not because their child was any different or they loved them any less, but because of their fears about how that child would be treated when they grew up or how what things they couldn't plan and expect in their lives, like to fall in love with somebody and do all the things that heterosexual people are able to do. So I think by showing that the representative parliament here celebrates their equal rights, it shows that those young people are a bit more embraced and equal and validated.
Okay,
and
but I mean, on the voting, as I say, a one vote majority this time, but in previous times there were very narrow votes in the other direction. So why should it be any different this time? I mean, it's a 50-50 split, basically, isn't it?
Well, it's over a 50-50 split, and I think part of the issue has been party whips and of course the petition of concern, which was designed to protect minorities. It's not designed for the DUP to have a personal veto.
No, but the SDLP used it to block the welfare reform bill.
This is because that's about a disproportionate effect, and actually evidence would show that people from a Catholic and nationalist background had been more reliant on benefits and would have been disproportionately
affected. It wasn't brought in to deal with issues like this. It was brought in to deal with, obviously, sectarian legislation and to avoid getting power over the other. But it's misapplied all round now, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Why not get rid of the petition of concern completely?
Well, because we had a problem in the past, Connor, with majority rule, as you'll probably be aware. And I agree, there does need to be substantial reform in Stormont, including of the petition of concern mechanism, which is outdated, but it was designed to, as you say, protect minorities. And in this case,
but it will be used if it's there, and you can use it even if it's abuse. It will be used. That's the problem, isn't it?
But I think people will say, on a level playing field, I mean, there is a moral victory that a majority of elected representatives supported this, and it has been used rather than protecting the rights of minorities to to regress the rights of minorities.
Okay, Claire, stay with us. I'd like to talk to Jim Allister, who's kindly pulled in from the road to talk to us on his mobile. Morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Seems to be a shift, doesn't there? You look what happened down south when they voted. Traditional values seem to be moving away. You have Mike Nesbitt's words, those opponents are on the wrong side of history. Do you get that feeling yourself?
Well, on a matter like this, it is, for me, a matter of conscience, and it's immaterial what the populist view might be. I hold my views, which I have. And every time I have the opportunity to vote, I will vote according to my conscience and my beliefs. There may be some people, and I think there are some people, who have been swept along and swayed by the populist demand, and indeed the populist intimidation, because some of the emails which were coming to members from the very aggressive gay rights lobby were quite disgraceful. And some people, I think, did allow themselves to change their vote. Now, whether some did it in the safe...
Well, I mean, it's always been a contentious subject. I mean, save Ulster from sodomy and all that. It's a very aggressive debate, both ways, very often, isn't it?
It's quite an emotional debate, yes. But whether some people thought it more popular and populist to change the vote, safe in the knowledge that a petition of concern was going to block it anyhow, I don't know. But, you know, we have a situation where we've now had it five times, and yet the strange thing is that it's always been a motion that's been brought. No one has ever brought a private member's bill, such as could be done to change the law, and to, you know, which suggests to me that some people in bringing these motions are simply playing to a gallery.
Yeah, well, I mean, just...
They're not actually trying to change the law. Well, a motion saying the law should be changed.
That suggestion
about... When they have the facility to actually try and change the law, and have never taken it.
Pick up on your suggestion, which has been mooted now, of a private member's bill. Is that the way to go, Claire?
I think it possibly will be in the next mandate. I mean, as Jim and others will know, private members' bill do take, I think, up to a couple of years to move through the process. So you don't do that, whatever we are, 7 or 8 months before an election. And I think if we're talking about properly using procedure to make it happen, then the proper way to do that would be to have an open vote to lift the petition of concern. And I agree with Jim when he said making it a conscience issue for members. I know in my own party now several members changed their mind, which I think should be supported in a political context where people made their minds up on certain things decades ago and refused to ever change them. It's an underrated value, but also at least one member of my party still does disagree and had the space to do that and explained his rationale, and we had a respectful conversation and I certainly stand by his right to have a different view. I believe very strongly that we persuade and we don't persecute on this.
But the fact is, if we had...
Yes, Jim, yeah.
Three or four other members of the SDLP...
Let Jim come in there,
Claire. Three or four other members of the SDLP felt compelled to change their vote. Now, whether that was the consequence of the populist pressure or pressure within the SDLP...
Well, no, but that's what we're talking about. There is a drift in that direction. I mean, if you look back in the last 20 years here in Northern Ireland, the drift is in Claire's direction and not in yours, Jim. I mean, even if you had a private member's bill, would a petition of concern be applied there in some way? I mean, how do you justify it in democratic terms?
I'm sorry, you'll never have found me justifying petitions of concern. I think they're part of the ugly scaffolding of Stormont. I believe Stormont should be democratised. We should be allowed to change our government. We should be allowed to vote a party out of government. We shouldn't have these nonsenses of petitions of concern.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get the DUP's view on this. We did ask them, but they couldn't make the programme this morning.
But I think Claire and others, so long as they support and sustain the undemocratic aspects of Stormont, including petitions of concern.
Yeah, but you didn't apply the petition of concern. I appreciate that. It was the DUP. But you're hiding behind this petition of concern.
I'm not. I'm suggesting maybe some people who voted yes were hiding behind it, safe in the knowledge that's what they really thought would be protected by the petition of concern. But let me say this. Claire Rand, tells us how bad a petition of concern is, and I largely agree with her in that. But she is one of those who supports the existence of petition of concern. She objects to its use sometimes, but not on other occasions when the SDLP use it. So I think you have to be clear on this. Either you're for a petition of concern or you're against it.
Isn't that a fair point, Claire Hannah?
No, I don't think it is, because the point is a petition of concern, when it's there and used correctly in the spirit intended, not just the letter of the law, to protect a minority. And in this case,
when they ask the OP, it's okay.
Sorry, I'm finishing. In this case, it's being used to stop progress for minority. And the fact is, while I appreciate that there are a minority of people who are against equal marriage, it doesn't affect them. It doesn't affect their marriage. As somebody said yesterday, if you don't like gay marriage, don't marry a gay person. It should be as simple as that. But in terms of people being...
Sorry, it's not as simple as that. It's about demeaning marriage. It's about redefining marriage away from its natural, traditional base of being between a man and a woman and perverting of marriage to something that was...
Okay, can I take the argument on, both of you, just for a second? What about the religious divide here? Isn't that a bit troubling? Only 4 out of 55 unionists voted in favour, while 44 nationalist MLAs voted yes. I mean, is that an accurate reflection of thinking here, do you think?
Well, could I comment on that? Yesterday we had some very interesting correspondence from the Catholic bishops, and the Catholic bishops were very emphatic in their opposition to this motion and said that it was a means of saying that having a child within normal marriage was of no intrinsic value. The biological connection between a child and parent was of no intrinsic value, according to this motion, and were quite scathing in what they had to say. And yet, those who adhere to that faith, in the main, voted against that line. And I thought that, you know, that was interesting that the Catholic bishops were very clear on this, but their adherents within the Assembly took a very opposite view.
What about the Catholic Church, then, Claire?
Well, I was sorry, and I continue to be sorry about the difference between, I think, rank and file Catholic members and people of Catholic faith, including myself, who feel that extending marriage to people who love each other and want to commit, and people like me who think marriage is an important building block of society, and it's good that more people should want to opt into it. But again, when we know that LGBT young people are struggling with mental health, I think the important sign that it sends, and to me, opening equal marriage is fully compatible with Christian values of love and compassion. And I think there are some things that people have reconciled themselves with, for example, living together outside of marriage, that the Catholic Church still are uncomfortable with. And Jim said that people were compelled to change their mind. Like I say, I think it's an underrated value. Personally, I had 700 emails in favour of equal marriage, and I think a lot of colleagues engaged with.
Yeah, but pro-gay rights people can be quite aggressive.
Well, I must say I don't in any way support any aggressive lobbying of anybody on anything, and I wouldn't stand over that, and nor I know would organisations like Rainbow and Amnesty, who have led the campaign on this, I know they certainly wouldn't condone that. I personally didn't receive even and I engaged with people, the handful of people who wrote to me opposing the change as well, and we were able to engage in a respectful and constructive fashion.
Okay, Jim, I mean, looking at it in broader terms, politicians such as yourself and many within the DUP are accused of being homophobic. I mean, way back, I think you were a supporter of the Save Ulster from Sodomy campaign. Would you still like to see it criminalised as an act, the Homosexual Act?
Well, I'm not suggesting that. I accept the position where we are. And
you've changed your mind too, then?
No, I accept the laws. I accept the law of the land. But let's be very clear. This isn't the end of this matter. If civil marriage is perverted to turn into same-sex marriage and to embrace that, then the next step of this campaign and of the aggressive campaigners who drive it shall be to force churches into religious same-sex marriage. Because it's quite clear that once you redefine marriage to define it as embracing all of...
But as a lawyer, you'd be well aware, Jim, that accepting the law is far from supporting it.
Well, the point I'm making to you is that once this law, if it is changed to embrace same-sex marriage, that will not be the end of it. Because the next campaign will be backed by claims of discrimination, because once marriage embraces same-sex marriage, same-sex couples will be able to say, we are being discriminated against by being only allowed civil marriage. And therefore, once you change the basis upon which human rights operate by the definition of marriage, then you open the floodgates. And I can tell you that a consequence further down the road will be the forcing of churches into ceremonies relating to same-sex marriage. And those who pretend this is only about civil marriage are quite wrong in that, and time will prove that to be the case.
Could these views be imposed upon the church, Claire, as Jim suggests?
No, I don't think they could. And the legal discrepancy that he's talking about that the courts are going to address is the fact that you can be married in every other part of these islands except Northern Ireland. And I don't know, does Jim think that somebody who was married in London or Dublin, does their marriage dissolve when they cross the border or whenever they land off?
No, it's recognised here as a civil partnership. Jim, that's the legal position.
If you would please just let me finish the point I'm making. The faith that I belong to, for example, doesn't marry people who've been divorced, but they're allowed to be civilly married. That's been the case for, I think, you know, decades, and that hasn't been challenged. So all of the legislation that has been enacted across the water and down south has very robust protections for churches, as is right, but I do use the example of divorce, and many years on that hasn't been overturned, and churches
OK, let's bring in another speaker now, the NUS President, Fergal McFerrin. Fergal, what do you feel about what you've heard so far?
Well, good morning, first of all.
Morning, Fergal.
Just a couple of points. First of all, to Jim, who talked about the petition of concern about how we need to have a proper functioning democracy. I think Jim needs to accept the fact that if we are to live in a democracy, then we should not allow ourselves to be governed by faith and by religion. The role of the church should not be one that dictates the principles in which we govern our society. And I also want to make the point that being of faith and supporting a more equal society are not two things that are in competition and are not mutually exclusive. There are many groups and faith groups and individuals of faith who believe in the right of same-sex couples to get married in Northern Ireland, and I think it's unfair, and it's also slightly disingenuous to portray this image that there are no people of Christian faith and belief who believe that we shouldn't allow same-sex couples to get married. Yesterday was an important milestone in the campaign for marriage equality in Northern Ireland. I want to commend all of those MLAs who came out and voted yes, because we are in a single direction in this campaign. And I think it's reflective of society that actually a majority voted yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, you talk gaily about petitions, about majorities and freedom and rights and all the rest of it. But, I mean, let's face it, for instance, that whole business about the conscience clause that the DUP MLA Paul Given put before the Assembly, that was crushed by the Shinners because they used the petition of concern. Now, that's not freedom, that's not democracy really, is it?
Well, I think it's unfair to try to conflate the two, but I do think that there's an important point to be made that actually the Conscience Clause Bill would have specifically, in terms of how many people viewed it, would have discriminated actively against a certain group within society. And so I do think there needed to be a more robust debate about how we balance the rights and privileges of faith groups and people of faith with those of other people in society as well. And I think we do need to have a more robust discussion about that. But I do think it's unfair maybe to conflate the two.
Let's bring in the Reverend David McElveen. David, what do you feel about this clear shift that's going on in the public and reflected in this majority vote in the Assembly to support gay marriage?
Good morning, Connor.
Good morning.
The vote in the Assembly, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't change anything. In fact, it probably, in all likelihood, will make people more determined on both sides of the argument. And I think there's a number of issues that need to be addressed very carefully. One is that this is not a matter of conscience. This is a matter of God's word. And for those of us who genuinely believe in the authority of Scripture, we believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that homosexuality, or as it is described in the Bible as an act of sodomy, is indeed an abomination. But also it's important for Claire to appreciate that marriage is not based on equality. Marriage is based on a complementary relationship between a man and a woman.
Now, everyone appreciates you have profound religious views, David, on this issue. They're just not shared by the majority of people living in Northern Ireland.
Well, that's true. And, of course, that has always been the case. And, I mean, we're talking, or at least we're hearing people talk about this being a historical decision. But homosexuality is not some new phenomenon. It is something that has been around for generation after generation. Some people have accepted it, some people have rejected it. It has gone in waves and troughs as far as public opinion is concerned.
Does it disgust you, the concept of homosexuality?
It does. I believe it is a perversion of sexuality, and I say that very sincerely. And that is not in any way to imply that I am homophobic, because...
Well, it must to, no. Mustn't it?
Can I maybe just jump in here a wee second? I think that... And I studied theology as well at an academic level. I And I would consider myself to be someone of faith. And I think, with all due respect to the previous speaker, that if you fail to make yourself and your church relevant to the lives of the people in which you should be serving, then you're failing to do justice to your own faith.
Well, that is,
I think the language that you're using is incredibly harmful. I also want to say to Jim Allister, to use words like perversion, like he did in the debate yesterday in the chamber, he should be ashamed of himself as a public representative.
Well, I think, you know, people have a right to express their opposition to words that are being said. But at the same time, Virgo, it is not the issue of... I don't believe that people should be known by their sexuality. I mean, I heard that there was a leading referee in rugby, referee in the World Cup final, not because of his sexuality, but because he was a very capable referee. And people should not be known by their sexuality. People have a part to play in this community, irrespective of their sexuality. But what many of us do find very difficult to accept is that so many are flaunting their sexuality in order that we should accept it, that we should receive it, and that we should give consent.
Well, on the business of the recriminalisation of homosexuality, David, I mean, the son of the late former First Minister Ian Paisley, Kyle Paisley, says he's not in favour of recriminalisation. That's not a view you share.
Well, I believe that God's word already criminalises the act of homosexuality, and that is the basis upon which
The only reason I mention it is, you're both, Free Presbyterian ministers. So, I mean, is this a split in the ranks, even within the Free Presbyterian Church on this issue?
I wouldn't have thought so. The Free Presbyterian Church has been very strong in its opposition against the act of homosexuality. That remains the case, and I believe that there are challenges ahead, and I think Mr. Allister...
So just to get it straight, I mean, you would recriminalise the homosexual act then, would you, if you were in charge?
Yes, I would. I don't hesitate in saying that.
Well, let's thank God that you're not in charge then.
Well, that's right, and I'm very grateful that I'm not, but I'm following biblical convictions on the matter. But I think Mr. Allister has a very valid point when he said that the time is coming whenever churches may well be forced to marry men and men and women and women. And I think that is coming. I think we have to see that the campaign by the LGBT people have been one that has been relentless in that they've sought to bring the age of consent down, the advocacy of civil partnership, and now marriage.
What about Kyle Paisley, though? I mean, what do you feel about his views as someone who shares the same church as you?
Well, his views are his own personal views. And, you know, one of the great things in Presbyterian government is that you have diversity and unity and unity and diversity. But, I mean, as far as the church is concerned...
Yeah, you wouldn't have much university and diversity if you recriminalised the homosexuality, though, would you?
Well, certainly from my point of view, that's where I would be coming from. And I'm very honest when I say that. And therefore, you know, my feeling on the act of homosexuality is clearly based on the authority of Scripture. I believe it is a perversion of sexuality. I believe it is wrong. And yet it's also clear in the Bible that adultery is an abomination as well.
I think probably what's happening, though, David McElveen, is that it's a generational thing, this. And the younger generation find your sort of attitude harder and harder to accept. And the older people are dying out. And history, the side of history, as Mike Nesbitt put it, and that's the way it's going. I mean, and there's nothing much you can do about that. I mean, King Canute couldn't hold back the waves, and you're not going to hold back liberal legislation.
Well, the reality is, Connor, that we're not created biologically to be homosexual. We are created for the purpose of procreation. And homosexuality does nothing to provide anything.
Well, Fergal, I mean, Reverend David McElveen is bringing science into this now. Would you like to respond to his views?
Yeah, do you know what? I actually think that that what he's saying in this discussion has become incredibly harmful. It's very difficult for me to actually listen to. Your views, you're entitled to them, but you are so wrong. I think the things that you're saying are, and actually, specifically on the issue of the position of the Free Presbyterian Church, since I came out of the weekend to my own family, I've had messages from people from across society, of all faiths and of none. I've had church ministers and individuals who would describe themselves as practicing Presbyterians, Orange men, people from across society in Northern Ireland, give me their support and tell me that, you know what, they don't necessarily think that being gay is something that is unnatural anymore. I think that to bring the views and opinions of young people specifically, this is an issue that is just gaining momentum, because this is a human rights issue now. Young people in Northern Ireland are growing up gay, LGBT, and they're hearing things such as what the Reverend is saying, and it's out of touch with society as a whole. And
okay.
For the church to be relevant, it needs to talk more holistically about people's lives.
We've had a busy half hour, and I haven't been taking calls. We've had a whole lot of calls on this, as you can imagine. I would like to take a couple of calls before the 9:30 news. David's on the line. David, what are your views?
Good morning, Connor.
Good morning.
Well, as a gay man, Reverend McAveen's attitude towards gay people is an absolute disgrace. First of all, the vote yesterday at Stormont, may I welcome the MLAs who voted for it. We are seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and I think the Democratic Unionist Party really do need to change the D from the Democratic Unionists, because they're certainly not Democrats. Maybe D for bigots would be more the appropriate. At the end of the day, the gay community in Northern Ireland want just exactly the same rights. The having set didn't come in England, Scotland, Wales, or the south of Ireland. And what David McAveen is trying to do is scare people, and his tactics and his behaviour. And it's pity he didn't preach to DUP MLAs who had affairs, instead of preaching to people who just want to lead their life.
OK, David, thank you very much indeed. Charlie's on the line too. Just quickly, Charlie, you wouldn't share those views, would you?
No, I'm for marriage between a man and a woman. And what our politicians on one half of the House have done have capitulated and showed their weakness after the pink vote. You know, what they have done, they have opened up marriage to this subculture. So therefore, in a democracy, do they not have to open marriage up to every subculture, making a way to polygamy, making a way for incestuous marriages? And ultimately, Connor, dare I say it, somebody that wants to marry their dog. This is down the pipeline for our community. Do we want that, really?
Yeah, but the thing is, we've got an assembly and they voted in favour, didn't they? So
yes, this is what they're voting for. They're voting for polygamous
marriage. Well, it's not quite what they're voting for. They're voting for gay marriage, let's face it.
Yeah. But if you open up one subculture to marriage, okay, you have to open up every subculture.
Charlie, we'll come back to you.